You're listening to a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk.
Number 364.
This podcast is dedicated to news about gear. Everyone loves talking about gear.
Hello and welcome back to the Outdoor Station. And yes, this podcast is indeed dedicated to talking about gear. As I record this, it is late October 2013, and there is certainly a nip to the air as we all one by one start going through our lofts and digging out the cold weather gear. We know it's getting colder, of course, as all the energy companies have just announced price increases. Bless them, so subtle, it must be like shooting fish in a barrel. However, I didn't manage to get to Friedrichshafen for my gear update this year, but instead I went to the much more intimate and smaller UK trade show at Stoneleigh, just outside of Coventry, in September, to see what I missed and to catch up with industry gossip, as you do. It was good to see the showground busy. Obviously there was an internal show, but externally there were tents from virtually every brand pitched. Acres and acres of them, well into the hundreds. And there was more than enough ripstop nylon to satisfy that particular fetish. All the names were there, displaying everything from a small solo tarp up to huge 6 or 8 berth family glamping tents. Thankfully, the weather held, and it was well worth the effort of all the sales teams to pitch them for the retailers and the press. One brand and a series of shelters which did catch my eye, and I know there is already significant interest in, is Nigor, the ultra-lightweight arm, if you like, of that huge European brand, Eureka. This new range has already made a big impact in mainland Europe, especially with their Dyneema packs, the lightweight Zero G. However, it is their Wikiup series, the TP-style tent, the Wikiup 3, 4 and 6, which is set to get outdoor pulses racing. Bonner Kaiser is the sales manager, and naturally, he told me more.
Well, first of all, we've been making tents and packs already for many, many years under the brand Eureka. This year we launched a new brand, Nigor, new to the UK. We bring the ultra-lightweight tents, double-sided siliconized tents, and besides that, Dyneema packs. Up to now, we've been selling it on mainland Europe already, a few of the packs and a few of the tents, and went really well, actually, up to now.
Been well received?
Yeah, very well received, and as we say, low stock levels and happy.
Which means us in the UK can't get hold of any. There's obviously a similarity between these packs and some of the previous packs from other brands, should we say, purely, I presume, because instantly, as soon as you see the black and white checkered Dyneema, you instantly think of another brand.
You probably think of some other brands. You think of brands of GoLite, Expat. It's a Dyneema fabric. It's a Dyneema. You cannot dye that fabric, so you will always see the white lines. And that gives the distinctive look, actually, of a Dyneema pack. And you definitely recognize it when another brand uses it.
Yeah, certainly. And, well, obviously, people are using it because it's great material. So we're looking at three different packs. Let's start with the smallest one in the range and tell me a bit more about it.
The smallest one in the range is the Mojo. It has a capacity of 26 liters. It can be used by as a daily pack, but you can also use it for hiking, climbing. It has three side pockets, mesh side pockets, where you can stuff some small gear, small cord on the front where you can put your rain jacket behind, or some other gear, of course. Tough, rough, easy and simple.
Okay. A waterproof zip, I notice, on the top.
It has a waterproof zip, you're right there. It doesn't have a frame, only two shoulder straps. Okay. and a hip strap.
Okay, and so it's one back length, very, very simple construction, and I know from personal experience of seeing people with packs similar to this, a lot of commuters use it, a lot of cyclists use it.
Definitely.
And people that they're Munro bagging, they just leave the main bag and take a small bag to the peak with them.
Definitely, and you can easily stow it away in a larger pack when you're travelling somewhere and use it when you're on the spot.
Yeah, it's just I can see that being very popular, certainly. So that's been popular over on the mainland. Are we seeing this springtime next year?
Definitely, you'll see it in the UK next year.
Okay, so let's move on to these ones now. Tell me about these.
These are the Zero Gs. We have them in two back lengths, 45 to 50 centimeters and 50 to 55.
Okay.
Capacity of the smaller one is 49 liters, capacity of the larger one is 53 liters. You have front pockets, zippered. They have a lid where you can also stuff some gear in, protects it from rain getting in.
Well, we've actually done a on the outdoor station, we've done a video of this particular pack to say if you're struggling there to look at the finer points. It's a good all-round backpack, and I think aimed at the general backpacker at 50 litres. As you say, two back lengths, a lot of nice little features on it with a capacity reducing feature at the top of the pocket, top of the pack, as well as the bottom of the pack, and basically everything where you'd want it to be for a general backpacker. So there's no need to go into great detail on those, but so I know they're in short supply because they're so popular, but again, they're coming back up to speed next spring.
Next spring you will again see them in the shops.
Well, let's hope so. Well, let's move on to the larger of the one, which is actually a new pack for in your particular series, coming out next year, which is a 70-litre pack, which is slightly on the larger side, but even so, got lots of features and not that heavy for a 70-litre pack.
No, it's under 2 kilos, 1,920 grams it weighs. It has an adjustable frame, this one. The other ones don't have an adjustable frame. You can adjust the length of the shoulder straps. You can put that a little bit higher, but this one has a full adjustable frame. Of course, you have more capacity. Dyneema again, waterproof zippers everywhere on the front pocket, a bottom pocket, side straps, compression straps there. On the top, you have some compression straps.
And does it have the same capacity reducing clips on the top of the top pocket there as well as on the bottom? I can see.
No,
on the bottom.
Doesn't have the. It doesn't have the
clips.
The clips.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I see this is. I mean, the people. I mean, the name of the pack is the Gravity. The Gravity 70. Certainly, a 70-litre pack is generally these days is somebody doing a very, very big trip, as I would class it to be. Doing the Appalachian Trail or something similar. I think most backpackers these days have come down to the 50-litre mark. But certainly for a 70-litre pack, it's got all the key features. And certainly I know Chris Townsend likes a lot of the features with the side compressions and the top compressions. The front pocket, I noticed, is actually split. It's two pockets which sort of overlap over each other, which is quite a neat idea. So you can separate your clean clothes from your wet clothes, I guess. You had a good response for this one?
We had a good response for that one. And what you say, it's a 70-litre pack, a little heavier. That's also why we padded the hip belts a little bit more. They're a little bit more sturdy, so you can also easier carry your load. And we had a great response, and this one you will see in the shops too next spring.
Now, I've been a bit unfair here with this with my guest here, because he's not a rucksack man, he's a tent man, and I presume I can now flip over the conversation and start talking about the Wikiups, because that looks like, from the glow in his eye, that looks like his area of speciality. So tell us about the Wikiup series, because I went outside and had a look at the tent display and I saw the Wikiup 6, I think, which is huge, absolutely huge. But tell me about the series.
It's 3 meters 10 high, the Wikiup 6. We have a 3-person, a 4-person and a 6-person version. It runs from the 3-person from 1.8 kilos to the 6-person to 4.5 kilos. And you're right, it's huge, but you can camp in there with a small family, or quite a large family actually, with 6. You still have some awning space there, and with 4.5 kilos you can still take it cycling or whatever you want to do with it.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of motorcycle tourers now that are starting to look at the TP tent market as being a way of having weight-effective capacity with a lot of storage area, because naturally they've obviously got their helmets and jackets and panniers and so on. So these teepees are certainly starting to spread around into all sorts of areas of interest.
Yes, it came now a little bit out of the ultra-lightweight backpacking only, and you see people who just like the TP form and see the advantages of the TP form, but cyclists, motorcyclists also start using them. And I think it's a good thing, because it's a nice shape and they're really wind stable because of the form. For next year, we've changed a few things on the Wikiup. They were out there already 2 years now. For next year, there will be a double-sided siliconized double-six nylon, which is kind of a special material, actually. if you puncture it, for instance, and you rub the area where you punctured it, it's self-healing and it closes up again.
Oh, that's good.
You shouldn't put a knife through it, of course, but yeah, if you have a small hole from a fawn or something, yeah, no problem, you rub it and it closes up again.
Okay.
And with a 10,000 laminate on the floor, it makes it a great tent, I would say.
The inner tents for the for these particular products, are they're not all mesh, are they? They're half mesh, half nylon?
They're like three quarters breathable nylon and one quarter mesh, more or less.
So they're good for the colder market, then
they're much good
warmer
for the colder market, not only mesh, because it tends to be too cold, and for the European countries, too cold. Definitely. Only a mosquito net won't work, won't do the trick. We want to build tents without compromising on anything, actually. We also not trying to build the lightest tent in the world, but we try to build the best tent in the world.
Yeah, I read that on the website, actually, and I thought it was quite a good philosophy. It may not be the lightest, but actually there's a lot of features on there that you pay a bit more for, but it gives you hopefully a product that lasts a lot, lot longer. So do you have prices for these three particular products to hand?
For the WikiUp 3, £450. For the WikiUp 4, £550. And for the WikiUp 6, it's an £1,100.
Since 2005, over 5 million people have listened to the Outdoor Station podcasts, and over 1 million have watched the videos. To make sure you keep up to date with all our releases, please visit the website and select your chosen social media network.
Well, once again, we are at a trade show and bumping to old friends, and we're with Sarah from Cicerone Press currently. And we'd like to catch up with Cicerone because they're a lovely British company, small and compact and bijou like ourselves, and trying to help everybody in the outdoors world get more enjoyment from it. So nice to see you again, Sarah.
Yeah, good to catch up, Bob. We haven't caught up for a little while, so it's always interesting to catch up and see what you're up to.
Exactly, and that's going to be my first question, really. I mean, how has the last 12 months since I've seen you been? What's been the uptake on the e-books and just general publication?
Oh, it's been a busy 12 months at Cicerone as ever. As usual, we're publishing, you know, a wide range of guidebooks covering all kinds of topics, from Himalayas to regional UK titles. But also behind the scenes, we're still busy with developing all the e-books. We currently have around 200 of our books converted to Kindle format, so we've been busy kind of getting those up to speed. The ebooks that we sell on our website that are in sort of Adobe version, we've virtually got about 95% of the range converted now, so we're well on our way through the project of conversion. It's taken us years to do it.
And I was going to say, I mean, when you actually do an ebook or do a conversion, say, let's talk about two different things, because if you've got a book which you have done that's in your library and then you're going to convert that to an ebook, how much work is involved in that compared to if you're doing a book fresh from now with new technology and developing the ebook in parallel with a printed book?
Working on the back catalogue was quite a big project, because essentially we were taking a printed file and having to sort of take it apart and reconstruct it in a completely different way so that it was, we could convert it to an electronic format. It was slightly easier with the format that we sell on our website, because essentially it's like a PDF version. Doing the Mobi format, which is the Kindle files, is completely different. You're essentially making the book again from scratch, because it's reflowable text and the way that it sort of presents itself on screen is totally different. So that's been a big project to get the back catalogue up to date. Going forward with new books that we're converting, our production process has changed dramatically. So all of our books that we lay out, whether it's going to be a printed book or an ebook, we're actually laying them out in XML. So essentially, when a book is ready to go to the printers that we're actually going to print physical copies of, we're almost ready to make that into an ebook at that point, because we've already got all the XML tags and kind of electrically behind the scenes ready and in place. So it's a much quicker process for us now.
It must have been, I mean, I loved your, there's a couple of ladies in your production department. Are they still there, the two ladies?
They are, Caroline and Claire. Yes, still beavering away.
They must have had to go through a hell of a learning curve the last, two or three years.
Definitely. I mean, from, you know, it's completely changed the way that we lay out books. That, you know, XML, it's taken them a while to learn sort of laying them out in a different way, but they've done incredibly well. We're also lucky we've got a great web guy behind us who is extremely patient, and he just kind of keep chipping away, and yeah, we're getting there.
Well, as we've just been talking about, I mean, delivery medium, people's the way they absorb information these days is changing and evolving continually as more technology becomes commonplace. What are you finding the uptake now in the comparisons, the trends moving with the hard copy and the e-book, the electronic copy? Is one taking over the other? How are people purchasing from you?
It's been interesting looking back, because we thought we'd see a drop-off in the sales of printed books, but actually the sales of printed books remain very firm, and obviously the e-book sales are growing month on month on month as we have more books available and we're selling them through more and more online sort of retailers. But it's been interesting with the sales through the Cicerone website, because we offer the customer, where they buy a printed book, they can get the ebook version at half price. And it's been really interesting looking at our international customer sales, where they're buying both, because, you know, they can download the book there and then, and, you know, if they're in Australia and the book takes 10 days to get there, then it's fine. They've already started planning their trip. They can get the content onto their iPad so that they can, you know, browse at it when they're out and about. But maybe when they're going off to do a trek, cause it's a long trail, they don't want to take anything electronic with them, they've then got the physical book as well. So it's interesting to see both are of interest to them.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly an area that seems to be a continual topic of conversation in the sort of publishing world, is what is going to be the format. It's like the VHS and Betamax battle. But it's good to hear that actually, you know, you've got your hands on both sort of formats, and they're both working well for you. And obviously, long may they continue to do so.
Yes, hopefully.
So let's do a little bit of PR now, and a little bit of promotion. What we're looking forward to winter 2013 looming now into 2014. You must have a whole pile of new titles that be ideal winter reading for sitting down on those dark nights in front of a roaring fire.
Well, it sounds good, doesn't it? We have the usual sort of collection of things coming up for the autumn. There's some nice winter sunshine, so if you're looking to get away, we've got Paddy's collected a few more islands. This time we've got Menorca and Gran Canaria. If you want a little bit of inspiration, then we have a lovely, slightly larger format book called Trekking in the Himalayas coming. There's a collection of authors that have contributed chapters, and it covers 20 treks across the Himalayan chain. Rather than it being a typical Cicerone guidebook, this is much more of a inspirational book, and sort of gives you a little bit more about the flavour and the feel of the trails, rather than a sort of turn right, turn left type guidebook. Okay. The other large project we've got coming in the autumn, the long-awaited 8,000 Metres by Alan Hinks. It's a beautiful coffee table book. Caroline, our designer, has done an absolutely stunning job laying it out, and the photographs in it are absolutely incredible. It's quite amazing that some of the photographs have been taken at such high altitude. It's quite mind-blowing, really.
I must admit, you've got the book on the stand here, the display copy, and it does look gorgeous. Now, I presume Alan was taking these himself, was he?
Yes, all the photographs were taken by Alan. Many people won't realise, as well as being, you know, a mountaineer, he's also a kind of a very good photographer, and he's done quite a lot of filmmaking as well. Not many people will know that.
Oh, it's a little star in our midst. Well, and that's due out, when did you say, next year?
So that's due out on the 8th of October. So
this year?
It's on its way.
Excellent. Okay, so that's an ideal Christmas gift for somebody. The sheer volume of output that you guys do in 12 months is phenomenal for such a small team. I mean, how many books do you actually produce a year, do you think? Just taking you aside for a second.
We publish on average around 30 new guidebooks and new editions a year. We tend to have sort of a couple of new editions of things where, when we've come to reprint the book, there's been a significant amount of updates, so we publish it as a new edition. And then there are always, you know, lots of projects ongoing. So we tend to publish around sort of 25-ish actual new first editions. More tend to be in the spring, and then it sort of quietens off a little bit during the summer, gives us a little bit of a break, and then back for a busy autumn.
Just looking at the numbers of that, that's on an average 2 a month. That's a book every 2 weeks.
Yeah, so January we've got 4 new books coming, and, you know, kind of, it's going to keep us busy.
Listeners, you have got to understand just how much work is involved in that. There's a phenomenal amount of work involved in publishing this sort of number of publications, and there's what I think, to my recall, 6 members of the team?
9 of us.
9 in the team.
Yeah.
Phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And to keep to the standard that they do is just... it's just wonderful, and the presentation is gorgeous. But there's one particular book that I know Andy Howe was raving about recently, and I'd like you to tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah, it's a lovely book. It's called A Walk in the Clouds, and the subtitle is 50 Years Among the Mountains. And it's by one of the Cicerone favourite authors, Kev Reynolds. It's slightly different to our usual books, whereas it's all narrative. And it's a collection of 75 short stories where Kev just talks about his life wandering amongst the mountains. His sort of early years exploring in Morocco to, you know, travelling through the Himalayas. Oh, it's just delightful. It's the kind of book that you can just sort of pick up and put down, open on any page, and just be totally lost and transported into the mountains, you know, with Kev's sort of lovely tone. And it's a lovely gift for anyone who's interested, just to kind of find out more about exploring and what it feels like.
And that one's available now?
It is. It's out now.
Well, that's wonderful, Sarah. It's been lovely to see you again. And I obviously hope it's not going to be as long until we bump into each other again. But congratulations on to the team, of course, on everything they're doing, as well as all the innovations you're trying to do in the outdoors world with the e-books and thinking forward and trying to work out where... how people want to receive your information. So Cicerone, as always, is looking good.
Excellent. Well, great to catch up again.
It's always good to catch up with Sarah at Cicerone. When Andy and I visited them a couple of years ago to produce a series of podcasts on their authors, it was hard to correlate that such a small team could consistently create the volume of output and publication which Cicerone does. As Sarah explained, there's only a handful of people in the office, and their library of work is staggering. Incidentally, if you visit the outdoorstation.co.uk website and use the search box to search for Cicerone, you can hear any of those interviews again. I think there was a series of about 10 of them, and they were very, very popular, where the authors explained either the books they were writing or how they actually went about creating them. Well, I think that does it for me. Thanks to Bonner for taking the time to explain more about the WikiUp series, the WikiUp 3, 4 and 6. These are going to be very popular, I can see, with a whole variety of people, not only the lightweight hikers, but also bushcrafters and small families. And thanks to Sarah again, of course. The new Alan Hinks book does indeed look lush, but as always, it's the guides that is the stuff of inspirational dreams on these dark, cold nights. I'm not sure if you've actually visited the outdoorstation.co website recently, but we now have 50 videos on there, and our aim is to try and produce a new one each week, along with a new audio podcast as well. Well, that's the plan anyway. So, until next time, folks, take care out there, enjoy these dark, cold nights, and bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorstation.co.uk. The home of UK-based audio and video podcasts for lovers of the great outdoors everywhere.